Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Targeted Talks. I'm your host, Nicole Tucker. In this episode, Dr. Sandra D'Angelo of Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center speaks with Dr. Catherine Peruk of Cancer Treatment Centers of America about frontline treatment options in the sarcoma space. Dr. D'Angelo begins the talk.
So, Catherine, I recently was in clinic and I met a patient that had a localized soft tissue sarcoma in her right thigh. How would you approach the care of a patient like that?
So from a surgical standpoint, obviously, the first things we want to know are a complete history and physical. We get information about it, how long they've had it, how it's been growing, if there's any symptoms associated with it. And then really imaging is the next step. So I like to get both a CT with IV contrast and an MRI to better define what this mass is, what the characteristics are, where it is in relation to nerves, blood vessels, other structures. And then, you know, depending on the location, and how it looks on imaging, some radiologists are very comfortable in saying, I think it's X, Y, and Z, this kind of sarcoma. In other situations, we may send them for a biopsy. And for patients and doctors, there are two types of biopsies. If it's very superficial and we feel like we can do a core needle biopsy in the office, we'll elect to do that. If it's a little bit too deep or we're just not sure we're going to get a good sample, we sometimes do an incisional biopsy in the OR. And that really gives us a little bit more information about what type of a mass we're dealing with. You know, there's multiple types of sarcoma, 70, 80 different types. And depending on the type and the size, it'll help us determine, does this patient need chemotherapy first? Do they need radiation? Do we take them straight to surgery?
Yeah, as a medical oncologist, I often will meet patients in this setting with bigger, higher grade tumors. And we often do talk about the role of chemotherapy. Ideally, our treatment paradigm favors a neoadjuvant chemotherapy approach because in that setting, we're able to at least get some sense as to whether or not the tumor is responding to the therapy. With regards to neoadjuvant or adjuvant chemotherapy, really the standard of care remains the regimen called AIM, doxorubicin, ifosfamide, and mesna. The field of sarcoma may be somewhat divided with regards to the role of chemotherapy, mainly because it's challenging for us to have prospective evidence-based literature supporting the use of chemotherapy in each specific subtype. But I think the most humbling part is that most patients with tumors greater than 8 centimeters, many of those patients will recur, and taking an aggressive approach for those that are fit probably is appropriate.
Yeah, agreed.
Do you often refer patients to radiation oncology?
I think it depends on the patient, obviously the size as well. There's lots of trials that really show that it doesn't matter whether you get a before or after, but there is a very good benefit for patients if the size of the tumor is greater than 5 centimeters. In my experience, worked with people who will send them preoperatively and some that'll send them postoperatively. I think it really depends on as well what your goal is. If you're concerned about how close your margin is going to be, for example, to a nerve, we may send it before. If you're worried about wound healing, we may send them after, because it has been shown that patients who get preoperative radiation therapy will often have higher incidence of wound complications. So oftentimes it depends on the patient, their fitness, and just what kind of tumor and where it is. But in most cases, I will say anybody with a tumor over 5 centimeters or high grade, we're definitely sending them to a radiation oncologist to discuss it, whether it's going to be before or after.
And how do you follow patients postoperatively once they are, healed from surgery and NED?
Yeah. Initially, I like to see them, every, 4 to 6 months, usually a little bit on the sooner side. So every 3 months, we'll see them for a physical exam, get imaging, really to assess the local area. And then also to keep an eye on, the concern for any distant metastases. So chest CT plays a very big role in that as well. Once they get about 2 years out, we'll probably start spacing out their clinic visits and their CT scans or MRIs. But I like to follow them, for at least 5 to 10 years, because the risk is really there for either a local recurrence or a distant recurrence with these tumors.
And we've also learned that some sarcomas can have delayed recurrences. And so I think the point that you raised to continue to follow patients even up to 10 years, sometimes even beyond that, depending on the initial tumor, is a really important one. And maybe a little bit different than some of the other malignancies where after 5 years, patients can enter true survivorship and not have to be concerned with recurrences. And obviously, we're talking in more general terms and not really getting into all the specifics, right? Because there are certainly some nuances with regards to each of the sarcoma subtypes and risk of recurrences and how those specific patients would be followed. But it's obviously challenging to specifics for each of those subtypes in the context of this discussion. This provides nice sort of guidance with regards to how to follow patients.
I guess the next question is, how do you sequence the available therapies at Memorial Sloan Kettering? And how does that sort of fit in with the clinical guidelines?
That's a great point. I think I'll preface by saying that for most high-grade soft tissue sarcomas, once we've proven the patient has metastatic disease, our standard approaches include either doxorubicin or gemcitabine and docetaxel. That approach is based on a relatively recent clinical trial that compared both of those regimens, and efficacy was quite similar with response rates in the 15 to 20% range and median progression-free survival of about 5 to 6 months. And so either of those regimens are very reasonable, and both are listed in the NCCN compendium guidelines. I think how we decide one versus the other often is based on comorbidities of the patient. So for example, if a patient has diabetes, maybe we'd want to avoid docetaxel, which can cause peripheral neuropathy. In a patient who has a coronary artery disease or cardiomyopathy and decreased ejection fraction, obviously in that setting, we'd want to avoid an anthracycline-based therapy. But either of those regimens are reasonable and appropriate. Beyond the frontline setting, other regimens that we can consider include pazopanib or dacarbazine. And then there are some, again, histology-specific approaches. So for example, for leiomyosarcoma, trabectedin is FDA approved. For dedifferentiated liposarcoma, eribulin, selinexor is also approved. And there's also been some interesting data with CDK4 inhibition in liposarcomas. And so I think that it is very important to ensure that pathology is reviewed at an academic center with a sarcoma pathologist to really ensure the diagnosis is correct, because that can certainly affect our treatment options.
And are targeted therapies starting to play a larger role in sarcoma therapy?
So again, it depends on the subtype. I think the best example of success in targeted therapy for sarcoma is GIST. And actually, it's probably one of the first malignancies where truly we learned that identifying molecular aberration or mutation and then linking it to appropriate therapy can really have impact on patient outcomes. And so utilizing imatinib in GIST is really the best model of success in that setting. Beyond GIST, there are probably less striking and impactful outcomes, right? Obviously, we know that NTRK fusions are present in about 1% of sarcomas. So, you know, sequencing and obtaining that information can be relevant, although sometimes limited by insurance and reimbursement. But I think that overall, the role of targeted therapy continues to evolve. And I think that depending on the subtype, there's been some breakthroughs.
So I think the one that sort of the one of the key trials that I wanted to bring up, at least in the surgical realm, which actually does sort of fit into what Dr. D'Angelo does with chemotherapy, is sort of the Strauss II trial. And I know we've been talking a little bit about extremity sarcomas, but you know, another subtype is retroperitoneal sarcomas. And there's been, you know, surgery sort of been the mainstay for that. These are tumors that are in the abdomen, they grow very big, and a lot of them have a high risk of either metastatic spread or local spread. And so one of the big trials that's being carried out now is whether or not we should be giving chemotherapy prior to surgery or just going straight to surgery. And this trial is accruing in multiple centers. It's probably at least 5 to 10 years out until we have an answer. But I think it's going to be a really important trial for us because as surgeons, we go straight to surgery in these patients. And if we can find out that there's a subset that's really going to benefit from neoadjuvant therapy, I think it's going to greatly change our approach and how we treat these patients. So I think that's a very key one that I at least want to bring up to people in the field.
That's an important point. And again, having that answer in a histology specific fashion is exceedingly relevant because, you know, the patterns of recurrence and metastases vary from subtype to subtype, right? So we know that dedifferentiated liposarcomas tend not to metastasize at distant sites with a very high prevalence. And so one may ask, well, do we need chemotherapy in that subtype as opposed to a disease like leiomyosarcoma or undifferentiated pleomyosarcoma where, you know, recurrences can be distant in origin and then chemotherapy may have impact. So excited to see outcomes of those data as well. I agree, it can have a tremendous impact on the field. I think from a systemic therapy approach, there's a lot happening in the field. I think the paradigm has shifted with regards to how we ask questions and how we design clinical trials. And most of the more recent breakthroughs in the field have really been in histology-specific fashion. So for example, peripheral tenosynovial giant cell tumor is a tumor that affects the joints and characterized by upregulation of CSF1R and pexidartinib, which is a CSF1R inhibitor. Was FDA approved in the context of that disease. And again, that's a nice example of targeted therapy driven by underlying biology. In epithelioid sarcoma, some of these tumors are characterized by INI loss and tazemetostat was FDA approved in that setting, albeit the response rate's only about 15% or so, but it is one option and another option, obviously, for our patients beyond those that already existed. I alluded to this earlier, in dedifferentiated liposarcoma, we know that these tumors are characterized by upregulation of CDK4 and MDM2 inhibition. And there's been a lot of work looking at CDK4 inhibition, first with palbociclib and then with abemaciclib. Abemaciclib has really demonstrated a very promising progression-free survival rate. And a phase 3 clinical trial is actually about to open through SARC. And we're excited to see that trial open and accrue and potentially further change the standard of care. Similarly, with MDM2 inhibition, there is a phase 3 clinical trial that's also about to open up, again, asking the question of whether this agent can potentially change outcomes. And with both compounds, the phase 1 and phase 2 data were promising and exciting. So we're really excited about those approaches. The other, I think, important topic and form of therapy to talk about is immunotherapy. We know that it's really changed outcomes for a number of different malignancies across the oncological space. Yet in sarcoma, we're still waiting for our first FDA approval. And a lot of the challenges has really been sort of how do we design a clinical trial? How many subtypes do we enroll? And if we enroll too many subtypes, will we miss a potential signal? And perhaps some of that was evident in the Alliance clinical trial of nivolumab with or without ipilimumab, where across a number of different sarcomas, the response rate with the combination of both immunotherapeutics was about 15 to 16%. But when you start to hone in on some of the subtypes, and there's additional data and clinical trials to support it, we begin to see signals of benefit for certain subtypes with immunotherapy. So for example, undifferentiated pleomorphic sarcoma, the SARC-028 trial with pembrolizumab noted a response rate of about 23%. And in addition, there's been clinical trials in ASPS, alveolar soft part sarcoma, where response rates with the tislelizumab approach nearly 40%. And so I think with checkpoint inhibitors, we're going to begin to see histology-driven clinical trials. And I think that's what ultimately may impact the field. The other big area of research is with T-cell therapy. The cancer testis antigens, NY-ESO and MAGE-A4 overexpressed, mostly in synovial sarcoma and myxoid round cell liposarcoma. And with both histologies, there's been clinical trials evaluating an NY-ESO TCR as well as a MAGE-A4 TCR, and both have showed exceedingly promising results, and look forward to potential approvals in the near future with those therapies. I think the biggest limiting factor with T-cell therapy is the HLA restriction. And so I think we need to look beyond HLA and start to identify other targets to be able to broaden eligibility criteria for our patients. But I think a lot is happening in the field. It's an exciting time to be a sarcoma medical oncologist. And I'm looking forward to the prospects of all these clinical trials that we hope can potentially change our standards of care.
I agree. And just to sort of drive home the point that you've mentioned several times that, you know, whether you're a surgeon, a radiation oncologist, a medical oncologist, really understanding the subtype of the sarcoma you're treating is important. And Memorial Sloan Kettering has some amazing papers out there looking at the natural history of these tumors, which are, you know, sort of must reads to really understand whether there's a local recurrence risk, a distant recurrence risk, because it's really understanding the subtype that's going to get the patient the best care.
The other important point is approaching care in a multidisciplinary fashion and in a specialized sarcoma center is also exceedingly important. And there's also literature to support that approach in that patients who receive care in a highly specialized center can often have improved outcomes. And having that multidisciplinary approach becomes important as well.
Yeah, we see that a lot, unfortunately, in the surgical setting where somebody's had a resection at an outside hospital, whether, you know, somebody doesn't think it's a sarcoma, or they're not sure. And then, you know, margins are very important from a surgical standpoint. So a lot of patients end up coming back, having to have a second operation. And with that comes their own specific morbidities, mortalities. So I would definitely agree, multidisciplinary setting with people, you know, pathologists who see this all the time to really help, you know, get a very comprehensive care plan.